This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and today we're going to talk to Matt Goldman. He has written a new mystery, and it's a new mystery series, and it's really terrific. It's called Gone to Dust, and just the title of it is kind of creepy. It is published by Forge and is out in all your bookstores. It will be out, I believe, on the 15th. Is that right, Matt?
Yes, August 15th.
August 15th, which is just right around the corner. In fact, it's a week from tomorrow, actually, on a Tuesday.
Yes.
Everything gets published on Tuesdays now. Why is that?
I don't know. It's when records come out, too.
Except for James Patterson. His come out on Mondays. It's like he's got a whole day to himself.
Yeah. Well, if you're James Patterson, you can do that.
You can say, I want to publish on Sunday, and they publish on Sunday.
Yeah, they would.
I love the way J.K. Rowling, when her Harry Potter books came out, they came out on like a Friday night so all the kids could go out and get the books. That was so cool.
Yeah, my kids loved it. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, you write. By the way, this book is really terrific. I finished it this morning, and yeah, I just love the way you write.
Oh, thank you.
And I was completely fooled by the whole thing, of course. But the thing is, when I read a book, I like to be fooled, and I like to play along at the same time. I don't want to know who did it like halfway through the book.
Right.
And if I do feel that way, then I feel kind of cheated. I'm like, well, I shouldn't be able to figure it out that quickly.
Yeah.
but are there clues for the people who are looking for clues?
Yes, there are clues, and it is the response I've gotten from everybody was they did not guess it, but it felt fair to them.
Right.
So that's the big thing to me, that it feels fair and that it feels plausible.
Now, Niles, his name, is it pronounced Nils Shapiro or Niles?
Nils. Nils, kind of the American pronunciation. Yeah.
Nils without the E. Nils Shapiro.
Yeah.
But what is interesting about Nils is he's not a very likable man on some level. I mean, he's very, I want to say the word caustic.
Yeah, I've gotten different description of that depending on where one, how one views an acerbic sense of humor.
But he can be very cutting to people.
He can.
And he enjoys it. He totally enjoys it.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't do it unless provoked. and that's kind of my rule with him, that if he's provoked, he'll do it. If not, he doesn't. Sometimes in his thoughts, he does it, but he doesn't, because he narrates the book in his internal monologue, he'll be a little caustic. But I worked most of my career as a comedy writer, and so one of the reasons I wrote in the first person was to use that experience.
So why have you suddenly now decided to write books? And what, I mean, you've been writing for TV a lot, and I assume TV's harder to write for.
Well, it's hard. Some of it's easier and some of it's harder. The business is harder. It's a much more collaborative process, which I find to be more difficult than writing by myself. I've always wanted to write books. I just didn't get around to it until now. So it's the medium that I get most excited about, and not that it's better than TV or better than film or anything. It's just the one I happen to respond to best.
TV's a very, for me, I know when I first start watching a TV show, I have to be grabbed by something. Something has to grab my interest. Whether it's Breaking Bad's Bryan Cranston in underwear in a trailer or whatever.
Very effective opening few minutes.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? When I first watched that scene, I thought, oh, I'm going to hate this show. A guy in his underwear in a trailer? Oh,
right.
If it's going to be all about this trailer, I'm going to hate this show. And so I didn't watch it the first time. And then I came back to it later on, and all of a sudden, I said, well, let me give it a little more of a chance. And I was hooked. And I, to this day, think it's one of the best TV shows ever.
I agree. I agree. It's one of the very top shows ever.
Because, and people think, well, how can it be? It's about drugs. I mean, how can a show about drugs be very good? But there's something insidiously wonderful about the way the characters play off each other in that show.
Yes, absolutely.
And you have the sleazy lawyer, and you have the suspicious wife, and you have the kid who loves his father so much, and you can't even imagine, you can't imagine your father could be anything less than perfect.
Right. Now, that show is one of the all-time greats in TV.
And then you have that classic moment where he throws the pizza up on the top of the house, and it lands right exactly on the top of the house.
Right.
You had that, but it's such a brilliant blend of humor and drama and serious stuff and people dying and all mixed together that is so works so wonderfully well.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Now, your book, Gone to Dust, just reading this book, I mean, it gets more and more fascinating as you read it. As you really get into it, you really realize that Nils has been hired by the police department, and he's going to do it his own way, but he's going to, and he's very good at what he does.
Yeah. Yeah, but Nils isn't a Jack Reacher kind of tough guy. He doesn't bash a lot of heads around, but he is independent and does work his own way.
And he's brilliant. I mean, is he? You think he's as brilliant as Sherlock Holmes?
No, he's not that brilliant. No, he doesn't have that kind of eye for detail. That kind of almost on the spectrum eye for detail. But he is more sensitive than most private eyes, and is able to use the information or the happenings of his personal life to get a pretty good understanding on human nature, and that's what helps him in his crime solving.
So I'm trying to think of the last time I've ever seen a crime victim have vacuum cleaner dust all over.
It's never happened to my knowledge, either in fiction or real life.
And I don't know why I'm laughing, but I'm finding it very humorous for some reason. Am I supposed to find it humorous?
Well, you're supposed to find it weird and intriguing, and the reason I did that was to make their inside the dust of those vacuum cleaner bags is the hair and DNA and fiber samples of a million people. So it makes forensic evidence worthless in solving the case. And I just wanted to do that to kind of, there's been great advances in science and crime solving made, but I wanted to throw those out for this one. And let him just go on gut and instinct and knowledge of what people are like. So
I find that your characters are always very interesting, and I like his sidekick. Elagard.
Elagard, yeah.
And a very interesting spelling. Now, what Anders Elagard? Now, is he Norwegian or something?
He's Swedish by descent, but he's American. I grew up in Minneapolis. I still have a house there. My kids grew up there. It has a very Scandinavian feel to it, so much so that when the book went out for foreign publication, both Norway and Sweden said it was too Scandinavian. I wasn't American enough, and I've never been to Norway.
Really?
Or Sweden. Yeah, I've never been there. So it's just based on what growing up there.
How many places are buying this book? I mean, how many different countries?
Well, right now it's just the United States, Canada, and France. I hope it increases.
That's three already. That's good. That's a good start.
Yeah.
Well, you obviously have some major talent. I mean, it's obvious just from reading the book that the book is really good. The book is compelling. The book is fascinating to read. I mean, and I found myself, wow, I want to move on. I want to see what's going to happen because I need to know what happened to Maggie. Maggie's a very likable person. I mean, we like Maggie, even though we don't meet her in the book.
Right, yeah. No, I know, and that's part of the design is when, what causes... I mean, I'm not interested in killing machine people. I'm interested in when people who live normal, productive lives are pushed to that point of killing or in a situation that gets them killed. That's far more interesting to me. So I tried to highlight that in the book.
Right. It's a series that I really can't wait to see how it's going to play out for future books. There's a very compelling scene at the very end with Nils and his ex-wife, which left me reeling after I read it, and it will leave a lot of people reeling. It's a very, I don't want to say too much about it because I don't want to spoil anything, but it's a very compelling scene and very unexpected, I found.
Yes, they have a complicated relationship.
Very complicated, but you feel for her. You do. You definitely feel something for this woman. You feel like she's been shorted somehow.
Yeah, well, there's no. I try not to write anything that's black and white because I find that not to be very true in life. So there's these people and their relationships are complex. So with the characters navigating through that, it's not easy and it's not linear.
It's really refreshing to find a new series that's not about. There's a lot of books out there today where people have secrets, people are hiding things from other people, and you find out secrets as the book goes along. This is different. This is a straightforward mystery.
It is.
That's really a very interesting one. And it's compelling and interesting, and, you know, and it's not even really that slow at first, which a lot of books are today, I find. I mean, I open a book sometimes today, and I have a little trouble getting into it, and it takes a little bit. And sometimes it takes, 40, 50 pages, and I'm into it. But, to me, I want a book to be interesting on every page. Is that hard to write?
It's not, but only because I get bored easily. So if I feel I'm bored, then my reader will be bored. So if I can keep myself interested, then I'm hoping my reader's interested as well. So I don't look at it as hard or easy. I just look at it as writing a little bit for myself, and that I don't want it to get boring. And that's one reason I don't outline, because I find that I've had to do plenty of that in my TV career, and I find it quite boring.
Right. Yeah. Outlining either works or doesn't. I mean, some writers are really good at it, and some,
everybody's got their own method, whatever works for them. But for me, I don't like to do it. And in fact, that makes your first draft your outline. But it happens when your characters are up on their feet and interacting with each other. So.
Well, people ask Elisa Scottolini that all the time if she outlines, and she starts laughing and says, "Are you kidding me? Outlining? What's that?"
Some people do it. Whatever works for them.
Every writer is different, and that's what makes interviewing authors so fascinating. Everybody has a different way of doing things. There are people like Lawrence Block who have to go away to write, have to go to a retreat and write. There are other people who can write at home at their desk, and I've always thought, well, if I were going to write, I wouldn't want to write out in the sunshine when it's real sunny out and pleasant.
No. As a matter of fact, in the galley, it doesn't have the book's acknowledgments, but one of the things I think is bad weather. It's quite helpful for writing. So, I like it. Sitting outside is not a great place.
So was this book more of a challenge or more of a fun book to write?
It was a little bit of both. I don't think any real writer will tell you it's all fun, but it's something when I woke up every day, I definitely wanted to do it. I never felt like I had to or I should. It's something I definitely wanted to do every single day. And the second one felt the same way, and the third one is feeling the same as the first two.
So you've already done the second one?
Second book's done.
Does it have a title already?
I think it's going to be called Broken Ice. It's possible it'll be called Bad Ice, but I'm not sure.
So is the plan to have every book take place during the wintertime?
No. And this one takes place during the spring. The third book takes place in the summer.
I am so excited for you. I really am excited for you.
Thank you.
Because after reading the first book, I know you know how to write. And, that's so important for a reader, to be able to trust their author. There's some authors that, sometimes they write a real good book, and other times they don't write a real good book. And you don't want to ever feel like you're in danger of reading a book that doesn't work for you. And I've had authors that I'm not going to name their names, but I've had authors who wrote a book that I just didn't care for.
Right.
And it happens. And, you know, you don't want it to happen. But if I can't imagine that's ever going to happen in your series, because I think you really know how to write an interesting book.
Oh, thank you. I've worked in TV for a long time, and when you work on almost 500 episodes of television, you learn a lot about story.
So tell us some of the shows I know you worked for Seinfeld.
Yeah, I started my career on Seinfeld. I worked on Ellen. I worked on The New Adventures of Old Christine. I worked on a show on Cartoon Network called Level Up. I worked on something with Fred Savage called Working. I've worked on a lot of shows, some good, some not so good. You learn probably more on the ones that aren't so good.
Now, as a writer on the shows, did you get to meet the stars?
Oh, yeah. We work with them on a daily basis. So in TV, the writers are the creative vision. Unlike in film, the director is the creative vision. So, you know, on Dirk Gently, I interact with Elijah Wood every day.
And, oh, that is so cool.
And the other actors. Yeah, it's great, and he's fantastic. One of my favorite people ever. So,
Do you ever have days where you just can't write with something? You just...
Yeah, I have days where I get stuck, sure. And then I try to do a little or solve one problem or have one good idea. And a lot of what any writer does takes place away from the keyboard. So when I have those days, I try to circle back and figure out what's getting me stuck. And I try every day, and I usually write every day. But if I get stuck on something, and usually those are, getting stuck is a good opportunity. It means you've written yourself into a place where you don't know what's going to happen next, and that's a great place to take the reader. So you just have to work through it.
Well, just reading this book, like I said, I realize what a talent you are. You really have some talent. This could easily have been just your everyday run-of-the-mill mystery, but it isn't. It's something special. It's something interesting, and it's something where I got to the end and I'm like, wow, that's very satisfying. And you know how important that is as a reader, to read a satisfying book. Everything's got to make sense. Everything's got to be. You can't pull a character that nobody's met before and say that's the murderer. You can't.
No, no, no. Right.
It has to be somebody that we can relate to and say, "Oh God, I missed that. I should have seen that. I should have seen that coming." That old adage that you've heard so many times. It's absolutely the truth. And they accused Patricia Cuomo of doing that with her first book, where they brought at the very end she brought a character in that nobody knew and said that was the murderer, and people felt. And the interesting part is that's the book she won the award for. It's weird how fickle the words people are. Now, I love Patricia Cornwell. I've loved it. I've loved her books since the first day she started writing. I just like I like her characters and I like her stories. And yes, she did get a little weird later in her career, of course. But you know, I still enjoy the characters. And
that's what it's about.
It really is. And I think that it's. I mean, with your character Nils, Nils is going to cause a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can assume that in book two he causes more trouble.
I mean, book two is more complicated, not overly complicated.
Why do you say more complicated? What about it's more complicated without going into too much detail?
There are more factors at play, more elements at play, and one thing leads to another, which leads to another, which leads to another, which, as opposed to book one, there's a body in chapter one, and then it's about solving that particular crime.
How did you get a blurb from Harlan Coben?
My agent got that, and I met him last year at BoucherCon. About a year before the book came out. So I just went up and thanked him, and he couldn't have been more nice.
Harlan's a great guy. Harlan's a super, super guy.
Very nice guy. shy, and I got to watch him interview Michael Connelly, another one of the writers I really look up to, for the who was the special guest of honor at BoucherCon last year. So that was a real joy for me. I really feel lucky to be a part of this group of mystery writers.
So is the idea to make each book stronger than the one before it? Is that your goal?
That's the hope. I mean, I don't know if stronger is the right word, but I hope that I learn from each book I write, and I'm able to make the next book better. I'm also hope people get further invested in the characters of each book, so that they're not reading just to find out the mystery, but they're reading to find out what's going on in these people's lives. I mean, the books that I like, Ace Atkins, who writes the Quinn Colson, she does that so well. I think that's really important.
Well, once you, and that's the thing, once you have a, like, it goes back to character. Yeah? Once you have that character that people relate to, that the people can identify with, people want to see more of, you know, then you got something, you really got something golden, like Jack Reacher, like Harry
right.
Bosch, the list goes on and on and on, you know?
Yes.
And of characters that people fall in love with. I mean, when they tried to retire Revis, and look what happened. And people were...
Right.
People were... I mean, I've heard that people send, like, death threats to these authors
really?
When they try to end characters. So it's like you're stuck with these characters. Not that the characters aren't great, because...
No, I hope to always be writing him. That's why I made him 15 years younger than me. I want to write him as long as I can.
Ned Nils... Are there things about Nils that we don't know yet that we're going to find out in book two, book three, book four?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
I mean, yeah.
Like, I won't even bring up his family until book four. Like, siblings and parents and things like that. Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff that I feel like in the first book I just scratched the surface with Nils. So...
I want to ask about the ex-wife, but I can't, because if I ask, I'm going to spoil something. So it's like it's hard to talk about it, because I don't want people. I mean, I assume, and I don't know for sure, but I would hope to see her again in book two.
Yeah, she does not disappear.
She's not going to go away that quick.
No, an event happens fairly early on in book two that brings her back into the picture.
You're at the most exciting time right now, because you've written your first book, and it's really that good.
And, oh, thank you.
And you're getting it out there. I don't know what appearances you're making, or I'm sure you're making appearances in Minnesota. Oh, and you told me you were going to do Poison Pen. I forgot that.
Yeah, it started, my publisher said in the beginning that nobody knows who I am, so I'll only do two appearances, and I said that's fine, but it's turned into quite a bit more than that now.
Well, so, I wonder what Barbara Peters thought of the book. I'm sure she's going to love it. I mean, I can't imagine her not loving the book.
Yeah, I'm excited to go there and to meet her.
Well, I mean, that's a monumental big store. I mean, that's a big leap forward for you.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's I thought in the beginning I was only going to do Minneapolis, my hometown, and Los Angeles, where I have worked for years and years. So, and then it has turned into Phoenix and San Diego and the Heartland independent bookselling thing in Chicago and other places in the Midwest.
Maybe they'll send you to Denver for Murder by the Book. At some point.
Yeah, well, I have friends who are writers in Denver who suggest I go there, but I would love to go there at some point.
I think I definitely think you should be featured in Mystery Scene, that magazine. That's a great... Have you seen that magazine?
I saw it at BoucherCon last year, yeah.
It is one hell of a great mystery magazine.
Yeah.
The only problem is they don't publish enough. They only publish, like, every 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, I noticed that. So I don't know. Like, I don't know exactly what's going... Yesterday, I got a call from my brother, who happens to be visiting in Seattle, and there was a review of the book in the Seattle Times.
Oh, how exciting. What did they say?
Yeah, very nice review. They really gave it a big compliment.
Well, how about Publishers Weekly? Have they reviewed it?
Publishers Weekly did a very nice review of it, and The Library Journal, the librarians picked it as their new mystery of the month. And so the librarians have been very good to that book, too.
Yeah, you are doing well already, and the book's not even out yet.
No, it's great. It's great. And I loved writing it, and I love.
So is the plan to do both, to write for TV and write books? And how hard is that going to be for you?
Well, I've done it in the last 18 months. I've written / produced 36 episodes of television and written 2 novels. So it's, my kids are, my youngest just graduated from university this spring, and so they're out doing their thing now, and so it gives me a lot more time. And I don't know. I mean, I have optioned the rights for Gone to Dust for TV, and I've adapted it. We'll see what happens.
Really?
Yeah. We'll see what happens. But, you know, I would love to write 2 books a year is what I'd love to do.
I'm trying to think who would be good to play Nils.
Well, I have my dream list, but it's probably going to be somebody who's great who I haven't even heard of if we get that far. Mm-hmm. So,
I'm trying to think of a good 30-year-old actor that would be good.
Somebody like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I think would be very good.
Oh, yeah,
maybe
excellent.
Maybe Topher Grace.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Channing Tatum. Channing Tatum is one of those actors that I've never really decided whether, I mean, he was so wonderful in Foxcatcher, but I don't think he's been wonderful in every movie he's ever been in, though.
No, but he does have a lot of range. I mean, he can play comedy and play drama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And sarcasm, I think, would do him well.
Yeah.
I think he would be good at sarcasm. I think, and it's and that's the thing with your books. Every book now, he's going to have to be sarcastic. He's going to have to tell a lot of jokes.
Well,
so is that?
Yeah, I mean, I hope it's just funny and not seen as something unpleasant. No, he'll always be that way. That's his voice.
No, I think that just reading the book, I like that side of him. I like the fact that he's going to let people have it. I like the fact he's going to be sarcastic and say things that are going to ruffle people's feathers. And I really like that. I mean, I think that's important to the series. I think it's a trademark that I'm looking forward to seeing more of.
Oh, good.
Because I think I don't think it's going to get old. I think it's going to get more and more interesting. You know, and who's he going to piss off next? I mean.
Yeah, and hopefully the stories aren't going to be funny, or most parts of the stories won't be, but I find drama without levity in it to be not very real, because in real life, people are funny in very not funny situations. It helps them deal with it. Breaking Bad's a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
Where some of the funniest moments on TV were in very dire situations. The Sopranos did it too, and so did The Wire.
Yeah. So, would you say Nils is a happy person, or is he unhappy?
I think he is a person who wants more happiness in his life, but he's an optimistic person and he's not a dark person.
Mm-hmm.
That he's not a dark, brooding guy. He's he has more hope and more optimism than I think some noirish PIs. So.
Yeah, and I hope, because you take a lot of detectives in novels and you think, are they really that happy? I mean, what makes them happy? And are they? Do they drink because they're unhappy, or you know, like Morse? You know, you take a character like Morse on TV who drank a lot, and you just got the feeling he wasn't all that happy with his life.
No, I think that's true, and I think that's an easy way to go. A lot of the positive response is that Nils is not a heavy drinker, and he's not a bleak individual.
He does like to drink a little bit, but just not
heavy. He drinks a little bit, But he's like two or three drinks.
But what is he coping from? What is he? I mean, obviously he's lonely. I mean, I you definitely sense that he's lonely.
Yeah, he did lose a big relationship in his life, and that is something that he struggles with. Mm-hmm. He's trying to move on from.
So how is he? Are there any similarities between him and you?
Yeah, there's some overlap, but not a lot. I mean, I've never solved a crime before. The sense of humor is similar. He's a little less polite than I am in real life. He's 38 years old. He's divorced. He doesn't have any kids. So that's very different than when I was 38 years old. I had two kids and I was married.
But how do your parents react when you tell them I'm writing for TV or how long have you been writing for TV?
Since I was 24 years old, so 30 years.
Yeah. 30 years you've been writing for TV? What was your first episode of TV that you wrote?
Well, the first, like, I wrote some little things that were, like, when I started as a stand-up comedian, and so the first jobs I got hired for were writing jokes for talk shows and little sketches things like that. But the first, so I did that for a while, but then a few years later, the first real episode of TV I wrote was Seinfeld. So,
now, did you write the whole episode?
Yeah, but it gets rewritten. I mean, that's just TV. It's a collaborative.
Now, what was the episode about?
Jerry's apartment gets robbed. It's called The Robbery. It's one of the first Seinfelds. Jerry's apartment gets robbed. He's had it with the neighborhood. George is a real estate agent back then. He wants to get Jerry to move into this other place that George is a real estate agent for, and then when George sees it, George also wants it, and Elaine wants Jerry's place, so they're all kind of invested in whether Jerry's moving or not.
It's got to be hard to write good comedy.
Yeah, it is hard. Writing comedy is harder than writing drama, I think.
I would think so, because you don't. How do you know something's funny? I mean, how do you know it's going to be funny when it plays out?
Well, that's the instinct you have to have or not. And there's a lot of things that go into that. Because if the characters are not in a believable story, if you don't believe their behavior in that situation, none of it works. So it's very fickle, the comedic part of it. You have to be invested and believe in those characters in the situation. Seinfeld got up to this place where they were doing crazy stories where George lied to a woman and said he was a marine biologist, and then Kramer's hitting golf balls into the ocean and one goes in a whale's blowhole and it washes up on shore. And someone asks if there's a marine biologist around right when George is there. If a new show tried to do that story, you would think it's stupid and ridiculous. But by the time Seinfeld did that story, you were with those characters. You would go anywhere with them. You trusted them, and even if you didn't like them as people, you loved watching their behavior.
Absolutely.
So it's really an earned. You have to earn your right to do this. To comedy is a lot about trust. You need to trust the audience. Needs to feel safe and trust, and understand what's going on in the story. Because if they're confused, then they can't pay attention to what's supposed to be funny.
And Seinfeld is one of the shows that just grew more and more funny as it went along. I mean, it became more and more funny. Huge.
I was lucky to be there. I was a baby writer. I learned a lot about voice and point of view, and sticking to that. And
but
that
how is it
the most
right? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, Raymond Chandler said the most important thing is voice and style, and it's true in comedy as well.
Is it, without going into any details, how is it working with actors and their temperaments or, you know, if they're having a bad day or...
It's good working with actors. I mean, some of them are more challenging than others, but most of them... the vast majority are lovely to work with, and they're in, you know, they live with those words and only those, their words, more than the writer in some ways, and they remember from episode to episode things better sometimes than the writer. So I think it's important to be sensitive to what actors are experiencing, or if they don't understand something, or if something doesn't feel properly motivated. So, I mean, the exciting thing about TV is working with really smart, talented people who bring their own point of view to the work. And, you know, when that goes well, that it adds up to make something much better than just a script.
Now, you've worked twice with Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes.
So yeah. Is she somebody you like working with? Is she with
very much? Yeah.
Now, what about Veep? Have you ever written for Veep?
No, I haven't worked on Veep.
Now, why is that? I mean, wouldn't they consider you?
Well, I'm not. That came from a creator from England, and that person has their own writers. And
It's a crazy show.
It is, and it is. It has a different voice than some of the other stuff she's done, but I think she does a great job with it. Julie is a very talented, hardworking person, and she's one of those people who absolutely deserves all of her success.
She looks like one of those people you could just call up and talk to and say hello to.
She's absolutely that person. She's a lovely person. She really is. She's wonderful.
And it's got to be a pleasure to go into work. Now, you were there the whole time Seinfeld was on?
No, just the first two seasons. So
and Christine, you were there the whole time or part of it?
No, just part of it. Just part of it. Yeah.
It's so exciting to talk to somebody who's written for television too, and because obviously with the book series, you have you can write whatever you want within reason. I mean, unless it's totally going off the rails, then they might say something to you, I guess. But
you can write whatever you want, and.
But don't you have some kind of a platform that they give you? I mean, don't you have any kind of a...
Zero.
I mean, it doesn't seem like we're ever going to see really graphic stuff from you. I mean, something that's really graphic. Or am I wrong about that?
Well, the honest answer is I don't know yet. It's not my nature to get extremely dark, so I don't think I'll be writing anything very, very dark.
So you'll never have a serial killer in your series?
I shouldn't say never, but I don't. It's not planned in the first four books, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you've already got four books planned out. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the fourth one is a very loose idea of what it is, but that's the way I start, so anyway.
So when do you start book three?
Well, I'm halfway through book three right now.
Oh, you are? Good God, you're ahead.
50,000 words into book three right now.
That's exciting. I mean, for me, as a reader who enjoys the series, it's exciting. I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing more and more of Nils. And I think once people start reading the series, they're really going to feel the same way.
Oh, thanks. I hope so. I really hope so, because I love writing it. I hope I get to keep doing it.
So is every... Like, say, let's book two. Is there something in book two that's going to really... I mean, is your idea to have something, some kind of a hook in each book to get people more and more interested in the series? Is that the idea, to a certain extent?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Book two starts a little more simply than book one, but then it complicates pretty quickly. And so there's more of a web that you're invested in Nils solving. I also go out to a small town way north in Minnesota for part of the book. All of book three is in Minnesota. All of book two is, and all of book three is. Book four I may send him to, we'll see, but I may send him to Los Angeles for a little while.
Now, what's the publishing schedule going to be like? Is it going to be a book a year?
It's going to be a book a year.
Okay. I was hoping you'd say every 6 months.
Well, I would love to do that, but they don't want to do more than a book a year. I would love to...
I wonder why they say that.
I think because there's a big promotion lag. There's It takes a while to get a book in the pipeline. It can happen. There's a prequel idea I have that they're talking about doing, maybe as a Christmas book, as a novella or something. But I think next year my plan is to write the fourth Nils book and a standalone book.
I love the scene at the end of the book with between Nils and this woman that he's met. I love that scene.
Oh, thank you.
The back and forth with the age and then the different things that they're talking about. It's so fascinating, and it's like, you know, we all through, you can sense the sarcasm of Nils, and you can sense that she's a little sarcastic herself. But
No, she holds her own with it.
It's very playful, though. It's a very playful thing, and it's very interesting. Dialogue is not easy to write. It can't be easy to write because
it's something I've worked on over the years, and it's what I get probably more compliments about than anything else is dialogue. So
I don't know if you read a book that came out last year called The Trespasser by Tana French.
No, I didn't. I didn't get to that.
You talk about a dialogue. If you get a chance and read that book.
Yeah.
Read the scenes in the police station. The interrogation scenes are just absolutely the most amazing scenes you've ever read in a book.
Oh, wow.
And it's the first time I've ever seen her do it as well as she did it in that book.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, God, this is wonderful. And you just can't wait to go back to the book to see what's going to happen next. And that feeling with the reader that we want to see what's going to happen next is the most thrilling feeling that you can, as a reader, that you can experience.
Right, yeah. No, I'm more often on that side of it than I am on the writing side.
But if you ever get a chance to read that book, you'll see exactly what I mean. She is just phenomenal at that. And when I was reading that book, I thought, oh my God, I have to keep going. I'm not even going to get to sleep tonight. I'm going to keep reading this book.
And, oh, that's great.
And you know, as a reader, that's a thrill. And mm-hmm. people don't realize. Like I'll say to people, do you read? And they'll say, no, I really don't have time. Or you know, and it's really sad that a lot of people don't have time to read.
It is. It is.
But we need to get more people reading because
I agree.
There's some really good stuff out there. There's some really good books. There's some really good authors and people like you who know what they're doing and can tell a really good story. And that's the bottom line. You want to tell a good story. When you close the book, you want to think, well, that's a good book. That's a book I could talk to my book club about. And in fact, I'm going to mention this to my book club. Because it's just so interesting. I mean, it's just it's satisfying. Like I said, the satisfying part of it is what makes this one of the good reasons to read the book.
Ah, thank you.
Now, what authors do you read that really satisfy you?
Well, I came relatively late to the mystery genre.
They're still out there, though.
Oh, I know. So.
Are you apologizing for that?
No, I just feel like I am apologizing a little bit for not being that well read in the genre. I mean, Chandler and Dashiell Hammett, of course, I love. But I like, I like Harlan Coben and Megan Abbott and Ace Atkins and Lee Child, of course. And I'm going to forget a whole bunch of them.
Oh, yeah.
I know I am. Why am I blanking on this one?
And you're going to hear from every one of them after they hear this interview.
No, but I mean, I went back and read some of the John D. McDonald books and Rex Stout and Lawrence Block. I'm a big fan of. I love Dennis Lehane.
Right.
Both his mysteries and his not mysteries. He wrote a book called The Given Day about the Boston police strike,
right.
Which is one of my favorite books of all time.
He's a very interesting writer because he's not afraid to tackle different things. He's not afraid to change.
No, I know.
Of each book. And, you know, the question is, does the reader go along with him? Does the reader feel the same way that they're going to get a good story every time with Dennis Lehane?
Yeah, no, he's such a good writer. The guy who writes the Dave Robichaux series.
James Lee Burke, yeah.
James Lee Burke, I love his writing. I really like writers who the prose matters.
So the bottom line is, How long do you work on a TV show as opposed to writing a book? I mean, how many hours a day are we talking?
Well, if I'm working full-time in TV, I'll work about 3 to 4 hours a day on the book during the weekday, and then the rest of the time I'm working on the TV show. And then I'll work more on the weekend. If I'm not working on a TV show, you know, I'll work 8 hours a day about on the book.
So when do you get your best ideas for the TV? I mean, is it while you're resting at home or sleeping, or do you wake up with ideas?
Yeah, it's always it's like in the shower or going for a walk, or sometimes when I wake up in that kind of half-sleep time.
Are you a naturally funny guy?
I am a naturally funny guy. But like a lot of naturally funny people, they're not on all the time. Most comedians I know are off stage. They're fairly subdued.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I think of Robin Williams, and I think I laugh every time I think about him, because you see him on the talk shows. He just talks so fast, you couldn't always understand what he was saying. But there was some genuine, really great stuff in there that he used to say, you know. And
yes,
but not all the time.
No, and anybody who's really good is, you know, they're always trying new things and pushing themselves. It's true with writers also. If you're always pushing yourself forward, you will do some things that aren't great.
Right.
It's just the nature of taking chances, and sometimes
Who I think about as far as comedy? I think of Roseanne, and I think of her show, and the great way she was sarcastic about things. She could be so sarcastic and so funny at the same time.
Yeah, she's one of the all-time greats.
And you know, and then you had her sister, who was even more sarcastic and hysterical to watch. I mean, because she was always getting herself into trouble somehow.
Yeah.
But the way they played off each other, the things that Roseanne used to say would crack me up. I mean, it's...
Yeah, that was a great show, and Roseanne's a great comedian.
And then you had John Goodman, and good God, John Goodman just takes off with his material, you know, it's like...
Yeah.
And, you know, that's when TV was really good. But at the same time, Roseanne was very depressing at times, too, because they didn't have a lot of money.
No, I know, and but that's why that show worked. It touched on something real and something human. And
And you've hit a very big point there. People can identify with the TV show, and I think that's why it's so successful, because they can identify with it. Even Big Bang Theory, where you have people who are he's smart. He's a very, very smart individual. But he's got vulnerabilities just like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know how to deal with women. He's terrible at expressing his feelings to women. That dynamic really works.
Yes, very much so.
And every TV show is different, and that's so you're working on Dirk Gently now.
Yes.
And do you have anything in the pipeline as far as coming up in TV?
Well, I have my adaptation of Gone to Dust, and we'll see what happens with that.
Oh, I hope
so.
Where would you like to see it? I mean, what station or what network?
Oh, I don't know, boy. I think someplace like, you know, definitely cable, not broadcast. So anywhere from Netflix, AMC, BBC America, any of those kinds of stations, I think would be good for it.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, maybe even maybe even HBO could be the next True Detective.
Yeah.
What was that, True Detective?
I would love it if it were HBO. But HBO, Hulu, Amazon, those, and there's going to be more of those kinds of internet access TV channels coming out. But something like that. I don't think it's just not right for ABC or NBC or Fox or CBS. So hopefully we'll find a home for it somewhere.
It's interesting you say you know exactly what it would be good for. I think that's fascinating. It's It's a fascinating. It'd be great to have a group of people and talk about that. Talk about where would be the perfect spot to see it.
And the business is changing so fast that, like, who knows? Maybe Apple will have a channel in 6 months, or a service, or you just don't know. There's so many. I mean, DirecTV has their own. There's so many places to go now.
And they're just throwing money at people lately, and it's amazing.
And those shorter seasons are ideal for these, because it would be one season per book. So doing 10 episodes would be perfect.
And just think, once you get it on the TV, everybody's going to go out and buy the books.
Well, that's what I'm hoping. Everyone asks if I want it to be a TV show or movie, and the answer is yes, but only to sell more books.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I, for one, can't wait for book two. I am really excited about book two, and I assume it's going to be next August.
It may be June. I'm hoping June, because August is a weird time.
Well, maybe you could slip me a copy of it.
When the copy editor gets done with it, which usually there's very little in that, but once it's in readable form, I'll get it to you.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. You're a terrific man. You really are.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice.
Because you're working, working for TV is tough. There's a lot of personalities there. There's a lot of executives and people behind the scenes you have to deal with, and that's not easy.
Yeah.
So you've got it both ways. You can come home and do your own story, and nobody tells you what to do, and then you go to work on TV, and then you got all these people around you saying, "Oh, this," you know. And so you've seen both sides of the spectrum.
Yes, and it makes the TV work easier knowing I have that thing that I do every day. That's just my thing. It takes a lot of pressure off the TV stuff.
Now, when will season two of Dirk Bentley,
in October.
October, okay. So we'll be looking forward to season
America.
Two.
Yeah.
That's exciting. That's really cool. So the book again is called Gone to Dust, and it's out from Forge in all your bookstores on August 15th. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.